listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. And there goes our train, part of our small town charm. Today we're talking to Christine Arilo here on Writer's Voices. After earning her MBA and spending over 12 years marketing big brands like Gap, Visa, and Frito-Lay, Christine Arilo traded in building images for companies for the chance to inspire women to break free from theirs, their images. Today, Christine is an inspirational catalyst who challenges and guides women to find, live, and love their most real me through her work as a coach, author, and speaker. And she currently lives in Oakland, California. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Christine.
Thank you. Thank you. And hello to everybody out there listening. Excited to be on the call today with you.
Thank you. Well, you've caught us in a bit of a blizzard over here in Iowa. How is it in Oakland?
It's sunny and 65. Oh, I understand. Jealous. I grew up in Chicago, so I'm quite familiar with the blizzards.
Well, we're jealous today. Well, tell us about this book, Choosing Me Before We. What does that mean?
Well, Choosing Me Before We is a book I wrote because of my own journey and the journeys of many of my girlfriends who, while we were smart and successful and independent and self-empowered, we continued to find ourselves in relationships that were the relationships that we really wanted, but we couldn't seem to figure it out. And what I realized through my own story and my own experience was that I had been looking for love in all the wrong places. I've been looking for love on the outside of me and settling for less than I really wanted. So Choosing Me Before We is a book that really is, I hope, is full of wisdom that I found on my own journey and many of my girlfriends did about how to love yourself first so that you can get the relationships that you really want.
Excellent. And tell us about this catalyst, sort of. Was it a catalyst when you broke up with your fiancé?
Well, that would be nice if I was the one that had broken up with him, but that's not exactly how the story happened. The catalyst was, in fact, I was 30 years old, living in the suburbs in Chicago, a successful marketing executive, getting my MBA. I had all the successful things I was supposed to put in place, so husband was the next thing to do. And I had a boyfriend of 15 years. We lived together, owned a house together, owned a business together. And my mother was throwing us an engagement party in the summer. So we drove to the engagement party, and on our way there, as we're driving in our little big SUV, he pulls the car over about two blocks from my mother's house, stops it, looks at me, says, "Chris, I don't love you anymore. Chris, I've been cheating on you for 6 months, and you know what? I don't want to marry you."
Ouch.
Yeah. It's funny. Every time I tell that story, I can put myself back in that seat.
Yeah.
And I always think to myself, gosh, why didn't you punch him in the face? You know, say, "I don't need you. I'm an independent woman." Because what I did is I actually looked at him and I said, "You know, that's great, but we have a party to go to. And we'll fix this later." Because that's what I thought I could do, because I had always been fixing it for 15 years. And we went to the party and I pretended like everything was fine. And for the next 2 weeks, I begged this man to take me back. Crying, and I bet many listeners out there have cried this hard, where you cry so hard where the makeup just runs off your face and you couldn't keep mascara on to save your life. Every day for 2 weeks.
Aww.
Until I went to, my girlfriend said, "You have to stop this, you're killing yourself, and I love you, but you need to go seek some professional help." So she sent me to her astrologer. And this woman's name was Carol, and she read my chart, and she read his chart, and she said, "Look, honey, you can follow this man around for the next 40 years, and he's going to keep breaking your heart, or you can leave, and your life will open up into places you could never imagine."
Yeah.
And so I packed up my bag, and I moved into my girlfriend's studio apartment. She shared half a bed with me that first night, I remember, laying in bed. She was a new bride-to-be, or she was, like, engaged, and she was all happy and in brideland, and I was mortified, laying in the bed, staring up at the ceiling, and I had that hole in my chest, you know, like when it feels like your heart's been ripped out.
Yeah.
Under chest cavity, and I had always thought it was, when that happened, it was because he was gone, and so I would always go back whenever we would get into fights and break up. But this time when I was laying in bed, this voice went in my ear, and it said, "Christine, the reason why you have that hole in your chest isn't because he's not there, it's because you're not there."
Yeah.
And I realized in that moment that I had been settling for 14 years and 6 months. And that I was willing to sell myself out, my life that I really wanted, just to try to get the love of this man. And I had another epiphany. Then I made a vow to myself that night. Actually, first thing I did is I will never settle again for less than my heart and soul desire. And you know what? I'm not sure what my heart really wants. And in fact, I don't even love myself. And oh my gosh, I don't even know what that means. And that began an 8-year journey that I'm still on, because I started asking everyone else if they knew what self-love was, and no one seemed to have the answers. And that's been my journey. And that's what the book came out of. I did go on this amazing journey to fall in love with myself. It was a little bit like that Elizabeth Gilbert's Eat, Pray, Love, although I worked full-time and got my MBA while going to Bali and studying with other great spiritual leaders. Uh-huh. And met a great person, moved to California, got a great job, and fell in love with myself. And then the phone calls started from all my girlfriends who were either married and miserable, getting divorced, or single and couldn't find somebody, and it just killed me to watch these women I love suffering. And so I decided that I needed to write a book. And that's where Choosing Me Before We came from, as a handbook, a girlfriend-to-girlfriend guide.
Wow, so it really kind of came about by popular demand.
Yeah, I had nowhere to give them another. My girlfriend was like, you need to write your story, Christine. You need to write this book. And it just came out of me. It just flew out of me.
Yeah, that's great. I remember a sort of similar aha moment for myself where I realized I was confusing pain with love, because if I was in pain over someone, then I wanted to go to that someone to fix it. So I want to get out of pain looked a lot like I want to go to you, which was very similar to I want to go to you because I like you, but they're actually very different.
They are. Well, in Choosing Me Before We, the first 5 chapters are the 5 vows that every woman should take with herself first, and the first one is I know myself and what you're talking about and what I experienced too, because I, you know, with my ex-person, we broke up all the time, and then I had that feeling and I would run back. It's kind of like when you get dental work, you know, and you stick your tongue in the dental work and it hurts, but you keep doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Some pleasure from the pain. What I realized is that, you know, we are all born in love with ourselves. We are born in love with this world. We are born in love with ourselves. And when there's this innocence, and then there's something that happens to each of us that cracks that self-love. You could probably pinpoint the time it happens. Sometimes it's more of an erosion. But then it opens up a fissure that allows what I call the love stealers to come in. So bullies or bad parenting or whatever. So we end up all holy. So we're born like a piece of cheddar cheese, all smooth, and we end up like a piece of Swiss cheese full of holes. And what we do is we go and we find relationships to stick in those holes to cover up our emotional pain. Or chocolate, or shopping, or TV, or, you know, I used to smoke, that was one way I did it. And so when we leave that relationship, that pain that you're talking about, that feeling, it's our own pain, and we mistake it for the pain of that person leaving, when really it's our own emotional holes.
Right.
And the only way to really get through that is to go back and love yourself, to love those holes closed. And that's one of the first pieces of falling in love with yourself.
Yeah, and we've all heard that you have to love yourself first, but how? How do you do it?
Well, it is. It's a totally amorphous, vague. It's like, oh, great, yeah, I should love myself. Great, now what are the 5 steps to doing that? So I think it is a hard thing for people to grasp. I think one thing I would say, the first thing is understanding the difference between self-esteem and self-love. Self-esteem is the knowingness that you can do anything. And there's a lot of women out there. I mean, we have equality now. Self-esteem is taught, you know, taught in schools and grade schools. We do know that we can do anything, and that's because we're taxed with doing everything. We have a lot more self-confidence and possibility than we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to have self-esteem, but it's not as deep as self-love. Self-love is having unwavering, unconditional respect and love for yourself that is so deep and so solid that you would never put yourself into any situation or relationship, including the one you have with yourself, that didn't reflect that same unconditional love or respect.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
is it possible? What about the other side where people say, isn't that narcissistic? Is it possible to love yourself too much? Or what's the difference between self-love and having an inflated ego?
Yeah, I don't think most people have to worry about loving themselves too much. There are narcissists that are running around out there, and my girlfriends and I have tried to marry most of them. I'll tell you this. If you look at the dictionary, if you look up dictionary.com, I'm a big believer in the definition of words, because I think it says a lot about what's going on in the consciousness, in our brains, in our planet, and what we believe. Mm-hmm. The current definition of self-love on dictionary.com is conceit, vanity, and narcissism.
Huh.
And when I saw the definition, I about fell out of my chair, because I was just like, we would never tell our daughters, don't love yourself.
Yeah.
We would never say that. But we say it to ourselves because we have this programming, this DNA that says, you know, oh, well, don't think too much of yourself. Oh, you know, who are you to, you know, take care of yourself first? Give everything away. So there's these ingrained patterns that I think have been passed down from generation to generation, like a bad set of china. to us, and they're old beliefs that aren't true. Most of us, you know, self-love is not self-absorption.
Mm-hmm.
Self-love does mean that, you know, you do have you do love yourself so much that you demand respect and unconditional love, but you can't demand what you can't give.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does really require you to also be able to see outside of yourself. Self-absorption, that's not self-love. But most people are not textbook narcissists. They are out there. I tried to marry one. Don't recommend it.
And you talk in your book about finding out who you are. And how do you know if you don't know who you are? Because you know what you know, and you don't really know what you don't know until hindsight. So is there a process by which you can really sit down and take stock and make sure that you know what you need to know about yourself before entering into a relationship?
Absolutely. I think, you know, one thing is, if you've never actually sat down and asked yourself, who am I really, or done any kind of self-discovery or personal development work, chances are you probably don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. You could very potentially be in what I call the escalator to death, which is... what the American dream is really kind of meant, has kind of become, which is this very linear path of, you know, go to school, get a job, get married, have kids, work at a job you probably don't like, retire and die.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're standing at the pearly gates and you're like, well, man, I wasted my ticket. Darn. Like, that's a bummer. And so I think, you know, there's a difference between living on autopilot, I call it, where you're just going along thinking like everything is just the way that you see it. It's the way you've been conditioned. It's the way that your family lives. It's the way that your friends live. You just take it that this is how things are. Mm-hmm. But there's a button that you press at some point, if you're lucky in your life. That's what I call the self-awareness button, where you really start thinking, well, is this really how things are? And what do I really want from my life?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that you have, when it comes to relationships, the first question, people always start with the he or the she or the we. The first question has to begin with me. And the first question is this. What is it that I want from my life?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't answer that question, there's no way that you can have the relationship you want, because you don't even know what you want. And what happens a lot is that people fall in love and then they try to make that relationship the partnership that they really want.
Mm-hmm.
Versus understanding the partnership that they're really looking for. So what I recommend to people is, you know, sit down and ask yourself, like, one really simple way to do it, start is, what are your 108 dreams for your life?
Wow, 108.
108. 108 is the most significant number in the universe. The whole yogic system is based on it.
Uh-huh.
You actually Google the significance of 108, it'll tell you all kinds of stuff about it. But, yeah, 108. And that's like, you know, if you live to be 80, it's only like, you know, only one a year.
So we get to have that many dreams.
We absolutely get to have that many dreams. And so I think, you know, it's really important to know that about yourself and really get clear about what's the life you want to live and understand your own emotional wounds. So that's the other piece. You know, when I grew up in Chicago, I didn't know I had emotional wounds. We didn't talk about stuff like that. You know, you had physical wounds, like you got a boo-boo when you fell down and you hurt your knee, but we didn't go to therapy. I remember when I started therapy, my mother said to me, well, we don't tell people our problems. And I said, well, you don't, which is how I ended up here. So I don't tell everybody my problems. I want to hear them.
Oh, that's great. Well, so for women who are currently in relationships, let's talk a little bit about, how do you know if you've got Mr. Right?
Mm. There's one really easy way to tell, and it's this. when you are in times when it's not easy, does he lean in or does he lean out? And do you lean in and do you lean out? And so by that I mean, when things get hard in relationships, the true test is, do you go to battle? Or do you, you know, have disrespect and do you fight unfairly? Or do you lean in and actually work together to get to what both of you need? So if you're having a hard time with something and you go to him and you say, you know, look, this is really upsetting me right now and I really need for you to listen to me and I'm not really, you know, sure what's going on. And he says, you know, okay, great, you know, I'll listen. I don't really know what to do with it, but I'll listen. That's leaning in.
Mm-hmm.
If he goes, well, you're just being a big baby, and you just need to get, you know, or this is all your fault, or like, you know, that's leaning out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a partnership. And I think what happens to a lot of us is we've been conditioned to find husbands, which, by the way, the definition in the dictionary is master of the house. Mm-hmm. So really rethink whether you really want a master of the house. Number two, we're conditioned to think that we want relationships, when I think really what we want are authentic partnerships.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, and that's why you have to know what you want in your life first, because you don't know who's going to be your best partner.
Right.
Until you figure out what the life you want is. Love is easy. You know, love is the easy part. Falling in love is easy. Love is just the start of it. We get mm-hmm. so confused about love. We think, you know, we end relationships and we don't love the person anymore. You don't fall out of love. You fall out of respect and trust and intimacy and honesty and friendship. Those are the things that are harder to keep mm-hmm. in a relationship, but they're what actually create a true partnership.
Mm-hmm. And I like how you say that when we say, well, I love you, but I'm not in love with you, that's just hurtful, and what does it really mean?
It means nothing. You know, what is someone supposed to do with that? It's awful.
Yeah.
And it's not true. I mean, that's what my ex-person, he said it to me, and it's like a dagger to your heart, and it's because we don't really have the words. We think it's about love.
Mm-hmm.
And once you love somebody, you always love that person. Well, oftentimes what happens is because we don't know how to be in communication and connection with each other, we take our relationship to the breaking point, to mm-hmm. the drama and the deceit, so it becomes hateful. And it doesn't have to end that way. But that's just how we've learned as a society. We've learned from, you know, people around us. We don't know how to manage our own emotions.
Mm-hmm. So what are the top signs that he's Mr. Wrong?
So one of the biggest ones is, do you talk about your relationship more than you talk about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
People who have great relationships, they don't talk about them because there's nothing to talk about. They may talk about their partner, what they're doing for the weekend or their plans, but they don't talk about their relationships because their relationships aren't work. They're in a partnership, and they can go to their partner to work things out. So that's a big key. That's a big key.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is, I call it the blip effect. And this is what kept me in my relationship for 14 years, way too long, is, you know, things are going along and they get bad. You know, you're fighting or whatever's going on and you're like, ugh, I can't even deal with this anymore. But then something happens, like some kind of catalyst, like someone gets sick or they lose their job or you have a huge fight and then you make up and then things are good. Like the blip goes boop and it goes up, you know, it's a boop up. And you're like existing at this high level where things are really, really good for, you know, a couple months or a couple weeks and then bloop, it goes back down again. And this pattern, this cycle, it's like a roller coaster, up and down and up and down and up and down. It's like this awful, vicious circle. It makes you kind of nauseous. It makes me nauseous remembering it. Great partnerships aren't like that. You have, you know, they're more stable. You have challenges and you have, you know, triumphs, but there's no roller coaster feeling to them.
Yeah. You're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, and this is Writer's Voices. I'm Chimene Montana, and today we're talking to Christine Arilo, author of Choosing Me Before We. Well, we're talking about how to know if you're with Mr. Wrong, and I promise we'll move on to the light side soon here, but while we're on the dark side, what about breaking up? If you realize you have to break up, what are your tips for making it as painless as possible?
Yeah, breaking up is hard, you know. It's like no matter, you know, endings are just hard. So just know that there's going to be some emotion to it. But it doesn't have to be devastating. A good friend of mine, she's actually a best-selling author, she said to me, she said, I like to think about breakups as breakthroughs.
Mm.
And I'm like, I really like that, Susan. I think that that's fantastic. And I think, you know, it marries with my belief that if you can start the relationship and end the relationship on the same love that brought you together in the first place and realize that what you both want for each other is for each other to have the best life, mm-hmm. and that you can both be sad that it didn't work out, that you couldn't do that together, but it doesn't have to become hateful. And in fact, you can really look at your relationship and look at what it gave you.
Mm-hmm.
And be, you know, good with that. And then also not putting any parameters around what the relationship has to be from there. I think a lot of times when people end relationships, they either cut it off, like, never talk to that man again, he's out of here, or they try to keep a relationship going when it shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just really, I think, about being honest with each other about what you both really need, having open communication, and keeping that love in your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, with people that I've been with that I've been incompatible with, I so want to tell them, take my word for it, because I'm seeing things about, there's parts of me that I have to check at the door in order to be with you, and you, those parts are therefore invisible to you, so you're just going to have to take my word for it that I can't bring my whole self to this relationship. And so when somebody breaks up with you, I think we should believe them, that they're seeing something we can't see. And even though it hurts, they are seeing something we can't see, and they're doing us a favor to let us go to find someone who you can be your whole self with.
Yeah, you know, what happens all the time is we, you know, and it is personal in a way, obviously, but we take it personally as if there's something wrong with us. And I see this happen all the time with women, and I did it myself, too, and it's so, like, self-abusive, where we'll break up, or we'll get broken up with, and the guy will go and he'll date somebody else, and we'll create these elaborate stories in our head about, oh, he must have changed, oh, he really loves her, and how come he didn't love me that way, and what did I do wrong, and we make it about us.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still the same person,
because
when he was with you. And it doesn't mean that because he's with her, he's any different. What the two of you had didn't work. And it's okay. And I just think that goes back to the self-love piece. When you really love yourself, you don't take it so personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a matter of compatibility.
Yeah, it's like, are you the right? I mean, it's pretty simple. It's definitely, are we the best partners for each other to go where we want to go in our lives? My current person, who I'm with, Noah, is my husband, and we're married. I don't call him husband, but we're married. He's my sole partner. Because, you know, the word husband doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But we have an agreement. And our agreement is that there's at any time in our relationship, when it's not working, when we're not happy, we'll come to each other and say, look, I'm not happy. And then we'll talk about it. And we never use the word forever. I think the word forever, it puts so much pressure and expectation and pressure on a relationship. You can't promise somebody forever.
Mm-hmm.
You can only promise right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very freeing to have that in your relationship.
Yeah. So how about, what are your thoughts on intuition? You talk a lot about women's intuition and how to listen to it.
She's your best friend in the whole world, whole world. And most of us lock her up in the closet for a big part of our lives. I mean, think of any time in your life where you heard the phone ring, right, and you knew it was somebody on the other line. You picked it up and it was them. Or think of a time in your life when your intuition told you something and you didn't listen and it ended up disastrous. From as simple as you get an email that you respond to right away that, you know, is scathing and bad things happen, to I've had women say I was, you know, standing at the altar and there was a little voice in my head that said, you're a fraud. What are you doing up here? Run now, and they didn't, and obviously, you know, divorced, you know, years later.
Mm-hmm.
So I think intuition is something that it's the fourth vow in choosing me before we, which is I trust myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're taught as women not to trust our intuition. We're taught to trust the logical. We're taught to trust the practical, and we're taught to discount this intuitive feeling we have. But our intuition is our strongest ally.
Mm-hmm. And what are some other ways that intuition shows up?
Well, we all have different types. There's four main ways that intuition shows up, and we have all four of them. And each person tends to have more of one or the other. So there's intuition shows up auditorily. So some people are auditory intuitive, which means you hear voices. You're not crazy. You hear voices. I hear voices.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way. When one of my girlfriends, when she met her ex-husband, the first day she met him, the voice in her head said, "Do not go out with this man. He will ruin your life."
Mm.
And so, you know, what she did, of course, is she married him and had babies with him, now divorced him, and is, you know, constantly fighting with him about everything.
Mm.
Then there's the visual intuition. So, like, you see things, like maybe you dream at night, or you see, like, a bus go by, you know, like a word will pop out. It's, like, something that you actually see. When I was with my ex-person, I would have these daydreams where I would see myself living in an apartment in a city with another man.
Hmm.
And I would just like la 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 la, I can't see you, can't hear you, block it out. But it was a premonition of what was, you know, my intuition was trying to get my attention.
Mm-hmm.
The other two ways are knowing, where you just know, but you don't know why you know. You have no logical reason at all, but you're just like, that's, I know this to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth one is feeling. So like one of my girlfriends, she was telling me just a couple of weeks before she got married, she was just vomiting and sick and nervous, and she thought, you know, oh, cold feet, and it wasn't. It was, you know, her body basically saying, don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mothers have that a lot with their kids, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not always convenient to listen, but...
Well, it's often not, because we don't like what the answer is.
Right, but maybe more inconvenient in the long run not to listen.
Yes, she doesn't lie to you. I mean, that's the great thing about your intuition. And it's all about building a relationship with it. And it helps you in all parts of your life. I mean, it's helped me in my career. It's what allowed me to leave corporate America and write my book. It's allowed me what got me my publisher, my intuition.
Hmm.
So it's a very valuable tool to use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there, when you're learning to listen to your intuition, do you learn to differentiate between real intuition and just a passing thought, or is there a difference? Or
there's a difference between opinion, intuition, and fear.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so, again, it's a skill that you have to learn over time, and just like anything else, the more you do it, the better you get, like riding a bike.
Right.
So you do need to know the difference between your intuition, what your opinion is, and your opinion comes from your head. It's a rational, logical thought.
Mm-hmm.
Your intuition comes from a connection to something bigger than you. It comes from like a higher intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, whatever that you believe. It's not a religious thing. It's more of a higher consciousness thing
mm-hmm.
that we all have the ability to tap into. And your fear comes from your patterning and your, you know, your experiences in life and your ego. And so it's really important to understand the difference between those. If you start studying your intuition and using your intuition, there's lots of different, you know, like there's a great book called Practical Intuition that talks all about intuition.
Mm-hmm.
The Enneagram, these are all in my book as resources. The Enneagram is a great way to understand your fear patterns. So starting to understand, going back to that self-awareness of knowing yourself, will help you understand at any point who's co-piloting your head and mm-hmm. your thoughts at mm-hmm. any time.
Yeah. But on a basic level, is it just that you practice following through on your intuitive hits and seeing how they play out, and then you start to learn the difference?
Yeah, it's like building a muscle. I call it, you know, it's like your intuition muscle followed by your trust muscle. So the more you use it, the more you can start to understand the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I look at it like, you know, kind of like a fun game. You know, I do it with parking spots. Last night, in fact, I wanted to go get some food, and I was like, I don't know where to go, and I'm like, okay, there'll just be a parking spot in front of wherever I need it, and of course, right in front of my favorite Thai restaurant, there's the spot. Pull in, and, you know, thank the universe, and I go.
Yeah.
Versus the one in my head that I'm like, oh, I'm going to go here, and then there's no parking there.
Yeah.
And when you open up to your intuition, what also happens is that you're often delighted by what you couldn't even possibly have imagined. So when you follow your intuition, you learn to trust your intuition versus your control, you oftentimes will get a lot more than you ever could have imagined.
Mm, yeah. Well, so far we've been talking about Mr. Wrong and how to break up and all that stuff, but let's talk about what it looks like when you're in a successful relationship. And starting with being in love, do you believe in love?
I love love. I think all there is love. One of the one of the reasons I wrote this book is because I was fortunate enough to bump into walking love in the form of a 6'3", 225-pound man named Noah, who is the man that I eventually married.
Oh.
And I always knew, you know, that that kind of love was possible, to really be, have unconditional love, to have true partnership with a man. And yet I just never had experienced it. And when I met Walking Love, I realized that I had a hard time letting love in. So in Choosing Me Before We, it's broken up into three chapters. There's me, he, and we. And the we chapter is all about our own love quotient. How much love can we actually let in? And when I met Noah, I realized here's this man that could just give me this unconditional love. And my love quotient was as big as a pea, because my heart was so protected from all the wounding that had happened my whole life. And so through our relationship and my own self-love journey, I've learned how to increase my love quotient by like a gazillion percent so that love can come in really freely now.
Yeah. So we all want to be loved, but...
We do.
Loving ourselves might be what allows us to be loved by someone else.
Well, yes, you can't let yourself be loved until that happens. We, every person on this planet, every person on this phone, every person is listening to us on the airwaves, every person, every one of us, I don't care how much money you have, I don't care what your job title is, I don't care how beautiful you are, every one of us, we all want to be deeply loved.
Mm-hmm.
And that love has to start with ourselves. And it makes me sad because we don't sit around and talk about that. We don't go to our friends and say, you know what, I really want to be deeply loved. You know, we don't have conversations like that. We have, you know, but that's the essence of all really we want as human beings is love and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. So what is engagement intelligence?
Well, you know, it's interesting, the engagement time period in our culture today. So, you know, originally when engagements were created back in the 1200s, they were always a year long for a specific purpose. They were a time period for that year for the bride and groom to get to know each other better, to make sure this was really the union that they wanted, to create a deeper level of intimacy, and also a time period for the people in their community to ask them questions, to really challenge them to make sure that this was the right partnership for them. And they believe in divorce. So once you're married forever, so you really want to make sure this is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in our culture, the year is for the wedding planning, because weddings are so big, they take so long to create.
Yeah.
And that year, and let's be honest, and I'll be honest, I did this the first time too, is I got on the wedding treadmill.
Yeah.
And it all became about the party.
Yeah.
Instead of about creating a deeper level of intimacy between me and my partner.
Yeah.
And then the ceremony came out of that intimacy.
Yeah.
And so engagement intelligence is something that I and my partner Noah have created to help people that are engaged take that period of engagement time and actually create a deeper level of intimacy. Because the way that you start your engagement, your marriage starts pretty much the time when you say yes. That's when the contract starts, not when I say I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so engagement intelligence is a series of questions and ideas and things that you should really be talking with your partner to make sure that you have that stronger level of intimacy before you say I do.
Mm-hmm. So creating Me Before We has a little bit of premarital counseling in it.
It does. Well, there's in the end of the chapter, in the we chapter, when Noah asked me to marry him, there's a whole story in the book, but when Noah asked me to marry him, we were at this beach in Carmel, California, and we had talked about getting married, and we decided that, you know, this is what we wanted to do and why, but I asked, like, I just want to be surprised, you know, just don't surprise me with the one traditional thing I wanted. So he does, he gets down on the one knee, he asks me to marry him, and the intuition comes into my head, and it says, don't say yes, ask him questions. And I was like, what? And, you know, but I'm like, okay, because I remember saying yes the first time and hugging the guy and kissing him and being all, like, intimate for about, I don't know, 15 minutes and then getting on the phone and calling everybody and telling them, oh, I'm married, I'm getting married, la, 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 la. So this time I said, okay. He said, Noah, you know, I love you and we talked about this and all that, but I have some questions I want to ask you. Because I really got that in that moment, what we were doing and what I was saying yes to was a contract that was already starting.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make sure that the two of us were really clear on what that contract was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was glad I did it because it actually informed the entire process of planning our wedding, as well as the actual ceremony and our vows, and it's something I even go back to often in our marriage.
Mm-hmm. How do you know when you're ready to say yes and then when you're ready to say I do? Mm. Is there a Hallmark guideline?
Well, I'll tell you the question that I asked him that was really important, which was, why are we getting married? Why mm-hmm. is this any different than what we're doing now? And it can't simply be because we want to have children or because it's the next linear step on the escalator to death. But really, why? What does marriage mean to you? What does marriage mean to me? And what's the purpose of this marriage?
Mm-hmm.
That was number one. Number two, you have to know what you want in your life, right? So you really do have to be clear on what you want in your life. And then you ask your partner, these are the two questions I asked him, what are your intentions for your life? I wanted to know what he intended for his life. Like, what? Why? Because I wanted to make sure it matched mine or it was complementary to mine. And then I figured after I said that, I'm like, well, okay, then the second question was, what are your commitments to yourself? Because you can intend something, but if you don't commit to it, it doesn't really matter. And he said to me, I promise myself that I will grow and 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 grow forever. And so in our wedding vows, he actually, his vow to me was, I will grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. And so sometimes in our relationship, because I move very quickly from point A to point B, and Noah moves more circularly. We do life differently. And sometimes I get freaked out that he's like, you know, not going to grow. And so what happened to me before with my ex-person will happen again. But then I remember that vow that came out of that conversation, and I know everything is going to be fine.
That's nice.
The power of really taking that time to deeply connect. And you have those conversations before, obviously, but there's something about doing it at that time that really makes a difference, because you're building a contract with each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, on one hand, you're advising women not to settle, but on the other hand, you're saying don't keep looking for Prince Charming. So don't settle. You can have what you really want. But on the other hand, don't look for Prince Charming or fairy tales. So can you explain the balance?
Absolutely. Well, you left a piece of the don't settle out. So the vow is, I will not settle for less than my heart and soul desire.
Mm.
Your heart and soul desire, don't desire Prince Charming. Mm-hmm. They don't desire a bank account. They don't desire a portfolio. They don't mm-hmm. desire a specific job, a specific packaging. And so that's the difference. I think a lot of us, and I was definitely, that's how I discovered it, we have these external parameters about what we think a man should be, or, you know, our partner should measure up to, as if he's a Cocker Spaniel in a dog show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, how would you like it if somebody had that, you know, list for you?
Mm-hmm.
Our heart and soul, they desire an essence, an energy, a partnership. And so in the book, there's a whole chapter called He, and it can be changed to She. And actually, if you go to my website, mebeforewe.com, I've actually downloaded an entire visualization for both pronouns that help you get to the four core essences of what you're trying to attract into your life. Or even if you're already in a partnership, what are those four essences? Not the qualities, not the packaging, because quite frankly, those change. Hair falls out, bank accounts dwindle, people lose jobs,
mm-hmm.
and you really want to be clear about what the essence is that you're trying to attract.
Mm-hmm. I listened to your little guided meditation on the partner you really want, and it was very nice and very useful.
I'm glad.
It brought some insights.
I teach a workshop called Dare to Be Loved, how to make your man magnet. But it really is, it's all about energy. You know, it's so funny. We spend so much time and energy thinking that we have to go out and do all these things to find this person. But if you can, like, energetically have in your heart and soul what you really want, and you energetically can feel that, then when you meet it, it's like it just knows. There's mm-hmm. nothing, and it comes to you. I didn't mean to meet Noah, but because I really knew what I wanted and it was embodied kind of in my heart and soul after like 2 years of asking my partner, my former person, mm-hmm. to be that person, Noah mm-hmm. showed up pretty fast, actually faster than I had intended. And so it's the other piece about really letting love in is that you don't get to pick the packaging and you don't get to pick the timing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're listening to KRUU-LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writer's Voices, and I'm Shemaine Montana, talking today with Christine Arilo, author of Choosing Me Before We. Well, Christine, we like to, many of our listeners are writers and aspiring writers, and so we like to talk a little bit about the process of writing itself. So when you decided to write this book, did you write it first and then set about publishing it, or did you seek an agent and a publisher first and seek a book contract?
No, it wrote itself through me. I was compelled. My girlfriend said, you should write a book. I said, okay, that's a good idea. I really needed to get this out. Felt like I wanted to help people. And I wrote an outline. And then I didn't do anything with the outline for about 5 months. And then I went to a retreat for 9 days. And every time I sat down near a tree, all I would hear was, write the book. So I said, okay. And I came home and I wrote the book. Literally the first draft came out in 3 months.
Mm.
It just poured out of me.
Yeah.
And it took me 4 years to edit the book. But the truth of the book, the wisdom of the book, really just came out of me. And then it was 4 years of really putting my story in, putting myself in, opening up my heart, being vulnerable. And then, you know, I was going to publish the book, whether I found a publisher or not. And again, this was using my intuition. I knew that there was a publisher that I would really like to do it. I wanted a publisher that was, big enough to matter and small enough to care for my first book.
Mm-hmm.
And I found New World Library, and I decided, I'm just going to go out to New York and go to the book expo and meet with them and tell them about my book and see what happens. And so I did, and I met with my editor, who's my editor now, she wasn't at the time, and pitched the book, said I'd like it, came home, wrote a book proposal in 2 weeks, sent it out to her, and heard nothing for 3 months. And I was dual pathing, so I had the cover had been designed, and I was going down the path of self-publishing. I had all these kind of events scheduled in the fall. And the day before I was ready to push the button on spending a whole bunch more money to finish the inside of the book, I'm going to email my inbox from New World saying, are the rights to your book still available?
Wow.
And I was like, well, yeah, they are. But she couldn't tell me for 3 weeks because she had to sell it in. So at that point, this goes to trusting my intuition, if I said yes, I'll wait and see what happens, that meant that I had all these events that I would have no book to sell.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, well, I have to trust that the universe doesn't want this book published at this time. And so I said, okay, great. And I actually, in 6 weeks, I wanted to create a whole line of self-love jewelry, which I have now. It's called Madly in Love with Me, which goes with my Madly in Love with Me holiday, which happens on February 13th. But I did that in 6 weeks. So I created a whole line of Madly in Love with Me jewelry. And then she called 3 weeks later. I had the contract. And here I am on the phone with you.
Huh. Wow. So did you always want to be a writer, or did this book just come out?
I wrote all the time when I was little, and in grade school and stuff, and I would win essay contests and all of that, and I wrote poetry as a tormented youth. Lots of poetry.
Me too.
But I never set out to be a writer. I was a corporate marketing person.
Uh-huh.
And a frustrated creative. My friends used to call me when I worked at the ad agency because I was on the account side. And what happened when I started to really get to know who I was and I moved to California and I just really opened up to me, I really realized what a gift I had as a writer. And no wonder I was, kind of always trying to do creative type jobs that weren't quite creative. They were like business plus creative.
Mm-hmm.
But at heart, I'm so, an artist. And I love writing, and I was able to hire a woman to work with me before I got the New World contract as my editor, and she really took a good writer and I think made her into a great one. She really helped me get over some of my Achilles heels, and now my writing just comes a lot faster, and I'm eternally grateful to her forever for that.
Mm-hmm. Are you part of a writer's group?
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not. I have a lot of friends and who are writers, some best-selling authors, and we just, that's kind of, I am part of a writer's group in that way, but not a traditional writer's group.
Informal one, yeah. Yeah. So are you going to continue writing? Is this just the first of many books?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have three that are sitting on my, like, kind of, you could do any one of these. Which one will it be? But I'm pretty sure I know which one will be the next one.
Yeah. When do you get your best ideas?
When I'm doing nothing. You know, when I'm laying in yoga poses, when I'm chanting, when I'm really just emptying and connecting with the universe, when I'm walking. Mm-hmm. And also from conversations. It's either like when I'm totally, for me it's all about being engaged with other things. I'm an extrovert, so my energy comes from being engaged to other things, whether that's engaged to spirit or that's engaged to people.
Hmm.
That's where my ideas tend to come from.
Hmm. Interesting. Do you write by computer or by hand or both?
Computer.
All the time. Even except when you're out by trees at retreats, or do you have your laptop then?
My laptop has become my fifth appendage, Aicha, which means greatest self in Japanese. So, I write better and faster. And I just wrote a movie, a 2.5-minute movie called Imagine a World of Love, which you can see at my www. Madly in Love with Me site. And that came out of me in like 10 minutes, but it just flew right out of me, right? You know, onto the computer keys. Mm-hmm. So I find that I can really kind of channel and write at the same time when I use my computer.
Yeah.
My hand can't keep up.
Yeah, I'm the same way. There is a certain nice flow about handwriting, but it's just so darn slow. If you're a fast typist, then it's hard to go back.
Yeah, sometimes I'll journal, you know, and I'll write, but more times when I'm journaling, I'm also drawing. So I'm also a visual artist. I paint and draw and stuff as well.
You have a blog on your website also, so you're writing for that regularly, right?
I am. I write at least once a week. I try to write twice a week. But right now, because I'm getting ready for this major self-love holiday on February 13th, I'm writing a lot of other stuff, but I do blog at least once a week.
Yeah. So tell us more about your self-love holiday.
So February 13th is the International Day of Self-Love, which, of course, is the day before Valentine's Day, because you have to love me before we.
Mm-hmm.
And I started it 2 years ago because I just really, there's a lot of people that were confused about self-love. Like, you know, you were asking me earlier about the definition of self-love, and we just didn't really know what self-love is or what it is and how to do it and what it looks like. So I just decided that we needed a self-love movement to create awareness around self-love and to have a day that we could just really take for women and girls to really inspire us to really put the stake in the ground to fall madly in love with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so Madly in Love with Me Day, which happens on February 13th, is actually there's events and online stuff that happens throughout the year. But on February 13th, I'm throwing a big self-love-a-palooza in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
California,
mm-hmm.
where there's no snow. And I'm bringing together some really amazing women, Marcy Shimoff, who wrote Happy for No Reason, and Sark, who's written, 15 different bestsellers. And we're bringing together 100, 150 women to spend the day totally falling in love with themselves. And so you can get information on that on www.madlyinlovewithme.com. And I'm actually, all the different interviews that I'm doing over the next couple weeks up until the 13th, I'm offering for anyone who's listening, if you are in the Bay Area and you want to come, you can type in a little special code. Just type in self-love when you go to checkout, and it will actually give you a special discount on the ticket. Mm. Just offering that to anybody who happens to hear me on a show, self-love.
Yeah.
But there's also events. So I don't know how close you are to Chicago, but there's an event in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be too far for you. One in Detroit and then one in Orlando.
Very nice.
And then there's also, you can also throw your own party. So I realize that not everyone can get to those four locations. So if you go to madlyinlovewithme.com, there's a kit that you can download for free that actually gives you all kinds of ideas on how to throw your own self-love affair or throw one for your girlfriends or your daughters. I had a woman in Rhode Island last year who threw one for her 5-year-old and all her friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's. I would like self-love just to light up across the world on that day.
Yeah, yeah.
So whatever way that, you know, just coming to one of our events or it's throwing your own party or taking yourself out to dinner and just loving yourself more, it's like just do that on February 13th.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think Valentine's Day started by someone who had the idea of a Valentine card. No, well, how did Valentine's... Do you know how Valentine's Day started?
You know, I don't. I should so I should probably look into that. Yeah, I don't think it started with Hallmark saying, I think we should make all single people miserable and then make couples feel all this immense pressure to show their love on this day.
I just have a vague recollection, though, that there's an interesting story, and it started with a person having an idea. And so you've created this international holiday as your sort of brainchild to offer the world, and it could take off. It could become a major thing that we all remember, and it's a great thing to remember.
Yeah, well, it's my, you know, it's my hope that that does happen, and I hope that the impact of it as well is my other secret kind of mission after that is that I would like Valentine's Day to just be about loving other people, not to be a romantic holiday. Because I think in a relationship, if you need a day to celebrate the romance and love in your life, then you need to kind of like rethink your relationship. I feel love from Noah every day, and you know I get flowers all the time because I love flowers. Flowers might not be your thing, but it's like, you know, it's like really you should being in a great partnership is a gift. Mm-hmm. I look at him all the time, and I'm like, I am so grateful for your love. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I think if we could make Valentine's Day just about loving other people, and you can do that now. I mean, if you're single or, you know, it's whoever, it doesn't matter. Just make it a day about sharing love. Just make that day about being about loving the barista, loving the toll person, being walking love.
Like in third grade when we gave Valentine's to everybody.
I was just blogging about that.
Were you?
You didn't give it to one. You gave it to everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I have a little story I want to share about a lady friend of mine who told me about going through a period where she was really falling in love with herself. And just like you would want to create a beautiful dinner or light candles or do special things for someone that you love, to do those for yourself, and I would say kind of fake it till you make it, even if you don't feel it at first, but do those loving things to pamper yourself with and try to feel that love in your heart, you know, coming back to you.
Yeah, I mean, falling in love with yourself is kind of, you know, it's a daring act, and it's kind of zany. It feels uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. In the Mail the In Love With Me kit that you can get on mailtheinlovewithme.com, I have exactly those kinds of ideas, so I love that you brought that up. I can remember the day that I actually did, like, the first moment I really loved myself, and I was at a romantic dinner in wine country all by myself.
Mm.
And it was like a 5-star restaurant and all these couples and this romantic fireplace and then me. And I remember every bite I took, and then I went back to my bedroom and I had dessert in this big fluffy bed, and it just locked in for me. Mm. And I did a lot of kind of crazy things. I mean, there was a whole year I spent where I would get up every morning and I would look in the mirror and I would say, I love you, Christine. And my dog thought I was a little nuts. My therapist was crazy for suggesting it, but it helped, you know. And mm-hmm. I did another practice where I would, every morning I would do 50 I love myself affirmations. So while I walked the dog, when I was living in Chicago, I would just start, I love myself, and then I'd start singing, I love myself, and I'd just kind of get crazy with it. And it was funny because it really liberated me to feel that love, and I think sometimes we're like, it's that love quotient thing again. You go, oh, you're not supposed to love yourself. Oh, mm-hmm. You know, who are you to love yourself? But once you really let yourself do it, and you don't really care what anyone else thinks.
Yeah.
And you don't apologize for being yourself, and you're not afraid to just be the crazy, zany person you are. You mm-hmm. free yourself. So many of us are trapped inside of ourselves, dying to let ourselves out. And that's a huge piece of self-love, is letting yourself be free, truly liberated to express who you truly are.
Yeah. And I would say, too, on the flip side, you might think, oh, I don't have a problem with that. I already love myself. Fine, done. Check that off the list. But until you start saying, I love you, or making yourself do it, then you may not realize that, oh, this is making me a little uncomfortable. I wonder why.
Mm-hmm. If you had asked me 8 years ago, Christine, do you love yourself? I'd have been like, heck yeah. Heck yeah. I had no idea what self-love was until I ended up in that bed, you know, heartbroken, had asked myself, how did I get here?
Yeah.
And that was the answer. And that's my commitment to everybody, you know, listening today and to the world, is to help to make self-love tangible so that we can... You can tell. It's not like you either have it or you don't. It's almost like there's different areas of your life where you have some or you have more, mm-hmm. or you have others. Some people might have great relationships, but they are stressing themselves out, overworked, not taking care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another piece of self-love.
Mm-hmm.
So they're great at taking care of themselves, but be absolutely lonely and not able to have a relationship because their love quotient is the size of a pea.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all about understanding that self-love is something that you do for the rest of your life. I teach this stuff every day, and I'm still learning to fall in love with myself.
Yeah. You're a life coach, too. We haven't really talked about that. We just have a couple minutes left, but I want to give you a chance to say any remaining things we didn't get a chance to talk about or talk about your life coaching.
I am a coach. I do. I work one-on-one with people, and you can get all that information at my website, daretoliveyou.com. And I work with a lot of women and some men, and just really helping them create the lives that they want, which at the end of the day is all based on self-love. But I coach people on their careers and on their relationships and just on creating the lives that they want to liberate themselves, be who they truly are. I also host something called Self Love Studio, which is a series of teleseries that I do with people. Like I just did with one with Mariel Hemingway and Sark and Kimberly Wilson, and mm-hmm. just talking about these areas of self love. And so, if you go to selflovestudio.com, you can find out about that. But really, I would just encourage everyone to take February 13th as a day to fall madly in love with yourself. Download the Madly in Love with Me kit, throw a party, get together with your girlfriends. If you're in the Bay Area, come to the Self-Love-a-Palooza, type in the word self-love, and you'll get a special discount. If you're in Chicago, Orlando, or Detroit, go to those. And if you are interested in having your own event, we're doing it again next year, so please send me an email. You can get my email address from any of those websites, and we'd be happy to have you be part. We have people blogging all over the world. I just got an email from a woman in India. So it's definitely something fun that we're inviting anyone who wants to be part of to participate.
Yeah, fun. And your Me Before We website is really fun to explore. Lots of stuff there. Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Christine. And where can people purchase your book? Is it available everywhere?
It is. Amazon, Borders, all that. And you can go to, it's listed on mailedinlovewithme.com and mebeforewe.com. You can get it. You can get to it that way as well. And it's called Choosing Me Before We, Every Woman's Guide to Life and Love.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Christine. This was fun. The hour just flew by. And we'll stay warm, and you enjoy that sun for us, okay?
I will. Thanks so much. Much love to everybody.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye. Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilbourne, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.